Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and Connor Newt here with you. Our friend Trevor Maddich will join us in roughly 20 minutes as we get into some college football and more with our pal Trevor Maddich. Again, that's coming up in about 20 minutes. But in the meantime, the Tennessee Titans have thankfully concluded the preseason and training camp and joint practices and all the things. And now all that is ahead of them is their season opener against the New York Jets a week from Sunday. So we will continue our 10 pressing Titans questions. And I will do the honors of question number 7. Will the Titans rank ahead of the bottom 10 in red zone plus minus this season? Now you're probably saying to yourself, what the hell is red zone plus minus? Well, Athlon Sports came up with this statistic, which measures a team's efficiency in the red zone on both offense and defense. And it's relatively simple to understand. If a team scores a touchdown in the red zone, it gets 6 points. If a team scores a field goal in the red zone, it gets 3 points. If a team allows a red zone touchdown, it loses 6 points. If a team allows a field goal in the red zone, it loses 3 points. And I find this, guys, to be a more valuable way to measure red zone efficiency than the normal way of red zone touchdown rate, for example, because those percentages can be skewed by the number of trips a team makes to the red zone. For example, the Eagles last season had the best red zone touchdown percentage at 70.5%. However, they went to the red zone only 44 times, the fifth fewest in the league. So, hey, 70.5%, incredibly impressive. But the Eagles did not get to the red zone with consistency. So, last season, the Tennessee Titans finished 31st out of 32 teams in red zone plus minus. They scored 150 points in the red zone. They allowed 279 points in the red zone for a total of negative 129. The only team that was worse, their week one opponent, the New York Jets, negative 189. They were outscored 333 to 144 in the red zone. In 2024, the Titans finished tied for 25th in that category at minus 81. So here's what I'm asking. Will the Titans finish outside of the bottom 10 in red zone plus minus this season, which means I think no lower than 23rd.
So what was the plus minus last year at 23?
The Giants were at minus 36 last season and finished in 23rd in that category.
Okay.
So will the Tennessee
be a huge improvement?
Will the Tennessee Titans finish outside the bottom 10 in red zone plus minus? By the way, if you're curious, the top 15 teams in the rankings all finished the season above 500. The only teams with losing records that had a positive plus minus were the Kansas City Chiefs, the Atlanta Falcons, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The top team in this category, the LA Rams plus 141, the Seahawks plus 108, the 49ers plus 99. So the top three teams in the NFC West.
All right. So if 23 minus 20, minus what was it? The Giants, they were minus.
The Giants finished in 23rd at minus 36.
Okay, minus 36.
And the Titans were at minus 129.
I do believe they will still be minus, but because their defense, I think they finish outside of the bottom 10.
So you think they will finish 23rd or higher?
Yes. I still think they're going to be in the negative, but I think their defense is good enough that they're going to, you know, give up threes instead of sevens a lot of times.
Okay. I can see that. So you have them finishing outside the bottom 10.
Yes.
In red zone plus minus the season. Willie Donick, will the Titans rank ahead of the bottom 10 this season?
You know, I think you came across these numbers, Adam, that I believe are really a good way to look at the red zone, because when you watch a football broadcast, the only thing they show you, and on the official stats, and this is where analytics has opened our eyes over the last couple of decades, right? You only see the touchdown percentage. And so I think that's part of the equation that does get overlooked sometimes, is how often are you getting to the red zone? There's a couple reasons why you don't get to the red zone. The best way would be you're always scoring from outside the red zone. You get a lot of big plays. That'd be great, but we know that hasn't been the case. But think about how many times they were asking Joey Sly last year to kick a 50-plus yard field goal. That means you didn't get to the red zone. And fortunately, Sly's got a lot of range, and he's become known for that. And then this preseason mirrored that even more, right? He was kicking all these field goals. They're like, wow, this is great, Joey Sly. And that is great. But it also was a reflection of they're just not getting there enough. When they got there, they weren't that bad. But they've got to finish drives and get to the red zone more. So I think this is a really good telling stat. I think we know that the red zone can fluctuate a lot. What I've learned studying these numbers is if you're a good red zone team one year, it doesn't mean you're going to be a great red zone team the next year. It's a little bit like the power play in hockey, to give a reference point. Sometimes you wonder why a team with Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar and the guys that the Colorado Avalanche, how could they be in the bottom five of the power play? They were a great team. But that's exactly what happened last year.
They finished 27th in the power play last season.
27th. Now, this year, they could be right back up in the top five or top 10 like they're very capable of doing, and I would expect that they would bounce back. So it is a little bit of a weird stat, and it can make a big difference in whether you win a couple extra games is how you do in the red zone. Third down, I think, would be in the same kind of category. All that to say, I still see them as a bottom 10 team here, especially when you're talking about part of the equation being getting to the red zone with a high volume, because it helps you there. For example, for people that are saying, what are they talking about? If I go to the red zone 10 times over five games and I score a touchdown all 10 times, that's 100%. I would be number one in the rankings of the NFL, but I only got there 10 times. If you guys are on the other team and over the same 10 games, you get to the red zone 20 times and you score 11 touchdowns and you add six or seven field goals, obviously you guys scored a whole lot more points. But your touchdown percentage, your red zone efficiency, based on the stat that you see at broadcast, would be lower than mine.
Correct.
By a wide margin. You'd be 55%, and I would be 100%. It would seem like, oh, Willie's team, that's the one you want to be. But no, you went to the red zone twice as many times. So this is a reflection more of how the offense is functioning and not just how you function when you get to the red zone. And so all that to say, I think I'm not expecting above the bottom 10.
I'm looking at a website called teamrankings.com, and I don't know how reputable this website is.
I've seen that one before.
The Tennessee Titans finished last season 13th in the NFL in red zone scoring percentage, touchdown only. 13th at 57.6%.
Right.
How many times did they get there?
Here it is.
Yeah.
NFL team red zone scoring attempts per game. The Tennessee Titans, 32nd, 1.9 per game.
That's the problem.
And that's why.
So when they got there, they did okay.
Yeah. Yes, but they barely got there.
They didn't get there very often.
So good for them for making the most of their limited opportunities.
Well, that's why they should probably change that stat when you get down to it on a football. But I'm talking about CBS and Fox. When you're watching, they use that red zone efficiency of the first stat you gave. So they would, if you were watching a Titans game last year, you would see that 13th. You're like, hey. They're doing all right in the
Why
red
aren't
zone.
They winning more games?
Exactly.
Oh, wait, it's because they don't get to the red zone.
Yeah.
And getting there once a game.
Right.
So this stat that you put out there is a more telling stat because it accounts for how many times you're getting to the red zone.
Yes. So the Tennessee Titans last season finished 31st in the NFL in red zone plus minus, according to Athlon Sports. They finished with a rating of negative 129. They were outscored 279 to 150 in the red zone. The only team worse than New York Jets. So here's the bottom five starting from the worst. Jets at minus 189, Titans at 129, Raiders at 117, Commanders at negative 90, Cardinals negative 72. What's the theme? All those teams were really bad.
Yeah.
Really bad last season. And right above the Cardinals, the Dolphins. So it keeps getting worse. So look, for the Titans to jump up to what, 22nd, 23rd, mm-hmm. They're going to probably have to make a jump that I think is totally unrealistic.
But that
doesn't
mean that, because the team that occupied that spot last year was the Giants, and they were not a good team. So just because they may jump 10 spots or right outside the bottom 10 doesn't necessarily equate to more wins. It just may be that they're getting a little bit, they're getting more opportunities. And the defense is doing their job, but they're playing close games, and they're in 9 times out of 10, they're losing those close games.
I would hope that there's improvement. This is, again, we get back to what are the expectations? I think that's what we're factoring in with these 10 questions we're asking one a day, is we're tempering expectations. This team is where it is. They have been one of the worst teams in the league over the last three straight seasons and running. And they've got a very young roster that doesn't look like they're a whole lot better on paper right now. We hope that that's not the case. But that is where you can win on the margins. If you are efficient in the red zone, if you're better on third down, if you don't turn the ball over, these are the things that can have your roster overachieving. And hopefully you catch a break with the schedule and it's not as tough. Maybe you catch a few more teams at the right time. Maybe it's not as difficult a schedule. And that's where you can make up some ground and be more competitive.
So, Derek, you think the Titans are going to finish ahead of the bottom 10?
Yes.
Willie and I believe that they'll finish in the bottom 10. Connor, what say you?
Admittedly, I struggle in the analytics department, specifically in plus minus across all sports. I mean, hockey is, you guys are going to have to help me understand that one day. I'll have to ask you. But I think what I've come to is basically this is about red zone efficiency and how efficient this Titans offense can be when scoring in the red zone. I think the run game is going to be their trusted ally in the red zone, assuming they make it there. And Willie's little soliloquy there was about, if they make it there, then they should be better. But it's a matter of if they make it there. I think with the pieces on offense that they've added, wide receiver, running back is the same, but it's a consistent room. If the offensive line shores up what we anticipate they should be as an improved unit, then I think I would side with Derek on this one. But like I said, analytics are not really my department. I don't really understand all the math that goes into it. But if the question is, do I think the Titans will be more efficient in the red zone? I think the answer is yes.
I think, too, it's something. I'd be curious to know your thoughts, D. Mason. The play caller, I think, is a key in this. Mm-hmm. If it is a new offense, do you have that guy that maybe they haven't before who can just make those plays when the field is smaller? I think Connor makes a good point. How well can you run it? But back in the day, you had to account for Derrick Henry and for Ryan Tannehill running the ball in the red zone. Those two, how many times when Ryan Tannehill was at his best, was he keeping the ball? They ran a lot of read option where it was either Henry or a keeper for Tannehill. They scored a lot, and they could even work in an A.J. Brown. That was a very good red zone team. But I'm not sure if Cam, who's not much of a runner, they don't have great weapons. We'll see if he can improve there with a different play caller and maybe some better options when they get down there. Well, but what Robinson hasn't been really a touchdown getter down there.
No,
right?
He hasn't. They got to identify who their red zone playmakers are going to be, first and foremost. And then you design your red zone around those guys that can make plays. That's why it's going to be, you know, imperative for a guy like Gunnar Helm, bigger body guy, plays in tight quarters. He's going to have to be one of those guys that step up. Obviously, Tate and Ellick, because they are seen to be more of the physical type of player, where that's what you need a lot of times, is that physical type player to in a red zone to go up and get some of those, you know, fade balls or those tight slants. Robinson is a guy that he may get lost in the red zone offense, but he still can give you there's still value in him in the red zone because you still can do a few things with him. And that's basically, you know, all on how does Dabo scheme for that, you know? Are we going to see a lot of things, a lot of variations and a lot of motions? And if you're not going to run the ball, because ultimately good red zone teams, I believe, run the ball very effectively. And if you can run the ball very effectively, now you open up the passing game in the red zone.
We do have some breaking Titans news.
Pay attention, people.
That I know a lot of you have been waiting for.
They're going to be really excited, you people that Adam's talking about.
Oh, yeah.
He's back.
From Justin Mello, the Titans are signing Xavier Restrepo.
The strip is back to
the practice squad.
I think he is becoming, tell me if you guys think there's a parallel. He's like the new Mason Kinsey now.
Yeah.
Like I think Xavier Restrepo is already more beloved to Titans fans than Mason Kinsey.
Well, maybe so, but I'm just talking about a guy that is at the level where he's not quite good enough that other teams are interested, but the Titans like him enough that they can keep him in this role. He's sort of that reserve guy. They were like, if we need another guy, that's a guy we'd like to have, but we don't like him enough to put him on the 53. That was Kinsey for 6 years,
yes.
Right?
Are your throats scratchy out there? Because you just caught the strep.
cough.
You got to love it, man. Do you think
he's improved?
I think he has. And the one thing I've said this before, like, listen, the knock on him is the 4.8. That is going, no matter what he does, he can have a clock on him and still somebody say, 4.5 or 4.4, and they still in their mind going to say, nope, he run a 4.8. That is always going to stick with him. But if you're just talking about a guy that we can put out there on the field, a guy that is, I believe, is always ready to play, a guy when a ball comes to him, he catches it, that's Restrepo. It's not flashy. He's not going to be your deep threat guy. He's not going to be your, you know, 100 catch guy. But when he's out there, he just catches the ball. That's what he does, and maybe that's not enough, you know. But that's why they choose to keep him on the roster.
615-737-1025. Rest easy, Titans fans. Xavier Restrepo ain't going anywhere. He's back on the practice squad, according to Justin Mello. I know you've been holding your breath all day long.
You keep on. You
I made it as far as I could go without being distracted by it. 615-737-1025. Trevor Maddich will join us coming up next. We'll get into some college football with Trevor Maddich. Now that it's week one, Derek Mason, and I did think of you last week when we learned that week zero will be no more after this season. So no more week zero. Derek Mason rejoices. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingit, 1025 The Game.
Bodyguard.
Yep. You thought you were going to slide that past D-Max? Exactly. Come on.
Whitney. Come on now.
I'm all over that one,
come
too.
Come on.
I mean,
I must admit,
this is one where, like, the category, if you really wanted to fine-tune a category for this song, it might be, like, song was bigger than the movie?
Yes.
Mm. Even though Whitney was in the movie.
Yes. The movie was great, though. I loved the movie.
You thought the movie was great?
I thought the movie was good.
It's a good
back
movie.
Then, it was, you know, it was good then.
I might admit that I was not as tough coming up with these movies as I probably should have been for two major cinephiles like Willie Donick and Derek Mason.
Oh, hit the bell.
Cinephiles. Willie Donick and Derek Mason. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Trevor Maddich, who joins us every Tuesday.
Sure,
we'll
Trevor's
ask him, and he's brought to you by Twin Peaks Restaurants, home of the 29-degree beer. Are you a major cinephile, Trevor Maddich?
I love movies. I'm not a major cinephile.
That may not be a bad thing.
Yes. Yeah. Some people are like, what did you just call him?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. You know what, though? I was thinking about your premise there. What songs were bigger than the movie or might be bigger than the movie? I know that's not exactly what you were saying, but you guys know Coolio's Gangsta's Paradise?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was from a 1990s movie called Dangerous Mind.
Yes.
Yeah, the song
Michelle
was
Pfeiffer.
Bigger. Yeah.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember the movie, but if Michelle Pfeiffer was in it, I'll go back and watch it.
She was a highlight. I don't think the movie was that great. Oh. Yeah.
Movie was bad, but the song was great. Michelle, she was great.
She was all right.
Yeah.
All right, Trevor. Week one of the college football season is upon us. No more of this week zero nonsense. Derek Mason
Thank
is
goodness.
Very happy about it. And I know as part of your duties as a college football analyst, you will be watching as many games as you possibly can. So let me ask you this question. As you tune into a top 25 teams game this weekend, which top 25 team are you most intrigued by entering week one?
Well, it has to be LSU, right? I mean, LSU's ranked 11th right now, and they're coached by the Darth Vader of college football, Lane Kiffin, which makes it so juicy and so much fun because they've become instantly, by signing Lane Kiffin, they've become the New York Yankees or the Dallas Cowboys of college football. There's a group of people that love them with a passion, and then everybody else hates them. But almost nobody is indifferent. And LSU is playing Clemson at home. And, you know, the LSU is a big favorite in that game. The thing is, though, if LSU loses that opener at home to Clemson, it won't put Kiffin on the hot seat, clearly. But it will be a big bunch of ugly rolling around the program until their next game, until they get their first win. And when I talk ugly, I'm talking about the cloud that followed Pig Pen in Charlie Brown. And so of all the coaches who have pressure on them in their opener, there's pressure on Dabo also for Clemson to win that game. But it would be more like Clemson made a dramatic step forward if they win. And if they lose, we expected it. And for LSU, if they win, we expected it. But if they lose, it'll be Big Ten's cloud of Phil.
I should have probably added a other than LSU caveat, but that's on me. That's on me. So, Trevor, one of the major questions entering this college football season is, who will be college football's next Indiana? And I'm not sure that what Indiana has pulled off over the past couple of years can ever be replicated, going from being the losingest program in major college football history to undefeated national champions. But let me ask you this question, Trevor Maddich. Do you think that Vanderbilt has a chance to be, quote-unquote, the next Indiana when you consider Vanderbilt's college football history and the strides the Commodores have made in recent years?
Vanderbilt would, but not with the quarterback that they're starting week one. I think Blaise Berlowitz is the right choice to start week one. He is the guy from New Mexico State that came over with him back, and, you know, he knows the system. He is not necessarily a quarterback that you would have confidence in leading you to compete for a national championship. But that's not his job here. His job is to know where the ball needs to go and to get it there, and much like Pavia, to move the chains, stay even with the chains, train together first downs, let the defense rest. And the reason Berlowitz is starting the the first game is that he knows that better than Jared Curtis, the freshman who has come in, according to the coaches. But the interesting thing is that Vanderbilt has not said that Berlewicz is our starter. He says he's our starter week one. And I expect Curtis to end up taking over. And this is why this is important. Vanderbilt has been steadily improving the roster as time has gone on. They have been steadily engaging more and more of the potential financial support from Nashville. You know, it's a private school. It doesn't have the massive student body or alumni base that some of the massive public schools have in the SEC and the Big Ten. But there's a lot of money around here. And a lot of that money is going to Knoxville. And Vanderbilt has kept an increasing portion of that money back home. So taking that, continuing to build the roster, sometime in the tenure of Jared Curtis, if he is able to develop the way they hope he does, that's how Vanderbilt can get to where Indiana got, which is to say, not necessarily a microwave coach gets there and 2 years later they win the national championship. I think this is like Clark Lee's sixth year or something like that. But I think that Jared Curtis is the catalyst that needs to thrive in order for Vanderbilt to claim that spot to where now they are a legitimate contender for a national championship run like Indiana has become.
Now, Trevor, with that being said, because yes, they did have Fernando as quarterback the year before, it was a different quarterback. But with that team in particular, I thought the way they built their offensive and defensive line with seasoned players, and it seems like that's the road, at least the last couple of years, that Vandy has chosen to take as far as their, you know, offensive line and some of the guys on defensive line. And it seems to be that way this year with them having more of a veteran offensive line. So does that put them closer to possibly doing some of the things that Indiana did? I'm not saying winning a national championship, even though that would be great, but improving like Indiana did.
Yes, that's key. I mean, it doesn't matter how good your skill people are if your line of scrimmage on both sides are not up to the competition in the SEC. I mean, Vanderbilt has brought in some experienced offensive linemen who have gelled into a pretty good offensive line over the last couple of years. They've brought in a bunch of new guys this year. They'll need to gel, but it's the same kind of thing. But they brought in some guys with experience. D-line kind of same way. They've got a lot of turnover up front, but they brought in guys that have played some football. And that's what Virginia has done, by the way. And I think it is a template that a lot of coaches are following. I mean, Virginia, they won 11 games last year, had a lot of turnover, especially on the offensive line. They brought in a bunch of guys to go with the guys that returned. The starting five offensive line this year for Virginia, the youngest one is a fifth-year player. Then they've got 2 6th-year and 2 7th-year players. Combined, they've played thousands of snaps, right? Now, are they the most talented? Not necessarily, but they are experienced and they are full-grown men in that fighting against some guys that are just out of high school. And Virginia, after having won 11 games last year, just smoked NC State in the opener. And NC State's supposed to be a pretty good team this year, certainly a quality team, if not a great team. Well, Vanderbilt, to get to the same spot that Indiana did, needs to do that. Indiana has been one of the oldest teams in college football the last 2 years, especially along the offensive line. And we know one of them is the backup center for the Titans right now, Pat Coogan. And that is what they'll need to do, because I don't know that Vanderbilt will be able to compete, at least not in the next few years, at that kind of a level where they can make the playoff and win one or two playoff games. And then after that, it just depends on who's hot and who's healthy. I don't think they're going to be able to do it with great talent in terms of skill people that the other side can't stop. They need good talent there, but the way they're going to get there is to be old and experienced. I mean, frankly, I want my Vanderbilt offensive and defensive lines to have kids that are freshmen at Vanderbilt. And I think going along that kind of a route from a portal standpoint and from a development and retention standpoint is how they could get there. I mean, the standard we're talking about in this hypothetical is, could they become Indiana? One of the things Indiana did was they had tons of experience on the offensive and defensive starting lineups. And that's what Vanderbilt needs to do over the next couple of years so that when, hopefully, Jared Curtis is ready to take over the program, he's surrounded by grown men.
Just to illustrate your point, Trevor, I just looked it up. J.C. Latham is younger than both Pat Coogan and Fernando Carmona. Even though those two guys are rookies, and J.C. is going into his third year. But that is the college football world we live in here. Let me ask you about another team that's coming to Nashville this weekend, and that's Ole Miss. Everybody has some pretty high expectations for them, but it's intriguing in the post-Lane Kiffin part of this. That will be great drama to watch. They've got Louisville. That's certainly not a gimme. How do you see that matchup?
I see that matchup as fascinating. You've got really the tale of two quarterbacks with it, because Trinidad Chambliss for Ole Miss may be the best returning quarterback in college football. Certainly he's one of the best when it comes to playmaking and playmaking off schedule. I mean, I did a breakdown on him last year that we kind of reprised actually on ESPN at halftime of a high school game a couple of weeks ago, that compared his play at Ole Miss with his play at Ferris State, the Division II school that he transferred from. And he was showing at Ferris State all kinds of physical talent that Division II defenses couldn't handle. And I wanted to see if he made changes in his technique and footwork when he got to the SEC to see if he improved those things so he would be successful against some of the best defenses in the country. You know what I found out? I found out that Trinidad Chambliss didn't change a darn thing last year. He made all the same goofy footwork, I would say mistakes, but for him it worked, right, that he did at Ferris State, and it still worked for him. For example, at Ferris State, one thing that he would do is when he would roll out into clear air, he wouldn't stop and set his feet and then deliver the ball from a steady platform. He would jump in the air, both feet off the ground, drifting to the side, and release the ball that way. Well, when you got a D2 defense trying to chase your receiver, you could do that. But he did that against Oklahoma. He did that against some of the best defenses in the country last year. So you've got this kind of experience in playmaking to go with Kiwan Lacy, one of the best running backs in the country, et cetera. Louisville, though, is fascinating to me because it's sort of a theme. They have brought in a very experienced offensive line in the portal. They've got guys that have played a lot. They've got one of the most disruptive havoc-creating front sevens in the ACC. So offensive and defensive line, Louisville can compete. Their big question is going to be a quarterback that has no experience. Lincoln Keenholz, the guy from Ohio State, was a backup there for 3 years. He almost won the job last year at Ohio State, ended up losing out, and so he transferred. And this is the first time that Louisville has had a mobile quarterback in a long time. Jeff Prohm, their coach, is great with quarterbacks. And it's going to be a tale of a quarterback with no experience but all the talent in the world from Louisville and a quarterback who's got all the talent in the world and SEC experience in Trinidad Chambliss. And I cannot wait to see how this matchup is going to play out.
Okay, real quick, one more game. Notre Dame fans probably hope that Wisconsin ends up having a good year. And, of course, Notre Dame is hosting – well, I shouldn't say they're hosting. Notre Dame is going to bring people wherever they go. But they're playing Wisconsin at Lambeau Field. How do you see that one? Can Wisconsin hang?
No. No, I think Notre Dame is going to smoke them. Notre Dame has one of the most talented –
come on, Trevor. Big Ten team. Come on.
No. And Notre Dame – you know, they've got the only problem on offense is they've got to replace a couple of running backs that were drafted high, Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price. But they've got a really good, explosive group of young backs to go behind an experienced offensive line. And C.J. Carr, the quarterback who is going to be one of the Heisman front runners early in the season at least, is actually having the benefit of an explosive receiving room, which has not existed at Notre Dame for a long, long time. So I think Wisconsin's going to fight like crazy, but they are completely outmatched. It's as if Derek lined up in the slot and I lined up to cover him in a one-on-one, right? It's not my fault, but I don't have a chance.
Yeah, pretty much so.
That's
unless you just give me like a punch to the chest, one of them offensive linemen punch to the chest. Yeah,
well, we did learn that Trevor Madge's nickname was Crime Dog.
Exactly.
So yes. Don't put it past Trevor Maddich to give you a little gut punch. Trevor Maddich.
I was given the nickname because our defensive line in the NFL thought that I was trying to stop crime. The truth of it is I was committing crime. I will be committing crime.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mace. Vingan and Donnick. He joins us every Tuesday at 4:20, and he is brought to you by Twin Peaks Restaurants, home of the 29 degree beer. Trevor, as always, a pleasure. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, guys.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, let's get into the latest on Lane Kiffin and LSU.
Darth Vader.
Versus the SEC. We'll discuss that coming up next. I'm also going to play a clip from Lane Kiffin that I'm hoping will make Willie Donick mad. And maybe all I have to do is mention Lane Kiffin, and that's enough to make Willie Donick mad. But I do want to hear Willie's reaction
just
to this
Hunter
clip.
Juracek. That
yes,
gets him
also Hunter Juracek. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
There's a lot of factors into it and different things, and one that I struggled too was, okay, this late, even though that's what you do in the NFL, and there's an argument, these players are paid like that, and it's what happened yesterday in the NFL. New players come in and take people's spots and added to rosters, and other guys have been there working. So I met with our leadership committee of our players, and I asked them, it's your team. What do you want to do? If these players are allowed to be added to rosters, what do you want to do? And every one of them was emphatic about if they can help us win, bring them. And, you know, we understand that, you know, we have a team that's practiced together, worked together all offseason, but one of them said, hey, this is how it works at the next level, and this is how the real world works. You know, there aren't days you can't bring employees into certain jobs to help the company. So that made me feel a little better in the struggle and being torn back and forth.
Well,
8 Mile, come on.
You do it. You got a Detroit guy on the show.
Yeah, come on.
He knows about 8 Mile.
City, man. Come on.
It's a great movie.
Fabulous movie.
Lane Kiffin is a tool. First a tool. He's just a tool.
Well, that makes me feel so much better, right,
He's
guys?
A tool.
My player said, it's okay. This is what happens in the real world, so we should just forget about it.
Now,
right?
Okay. Can we juxtapose, speaking of movies, all right, not 8 Mile, but
yes.
Let's juxtapose that talk. No, not 10 Mile. But that scene, that clip that we just heard, picture the scene, Lane Kiffin going, oh, yeah, you know, my leadership group said, bring him on. We can help us win. Now, let's think of the movie Miracle. Where in the movie, and I assume this happened in some version in the real story of the USA gold medal team of 1980, Herb Brooks pushes his team's button by bringing in a player. I forget the guy's name. But he brought a guy in late in the process. You remember the scene?
Yes.
They're outside of a bus, and Mike Arruzzioni and the leadership group of that team said, heck no. Do not bring this guy in here. We've been sweating. We've been doing all this together. So, okay, what's a better example of a team? The Miracle team or Lane Kiffin's LSU team? I don't know about the leadership group on LSU, but I'm siding with the Miracle team. That's just how I look at a team and this whole thing about that's how they do it in the NFL. This isn't the NFL.
Exactly.
This isn't the NFL.
Okay.
And look, in real life, I would hope that I work for an organization that does value teamwork and people who have been in the process. And if you're bringing an outsider, it's not just for any reason, that it's for the right reason.
So what you're telling me is that Lane Kiffin, what you're trying to convince everybody is that this group of guys went through all of that tough work and all of that. Even the guys that aren't going to be starters, backups, they went through all of this stuff. And they got to the end and was like, okay, we ready for the season. I've earned a spot and everything else. And then you sit them down and you ask them, okay, we're going to bring in these two NFL guys. I'm sure they're probably, for one, thinking like, NFL guy, like, what's going on here?
Right.
Like, what do you mean NFL guys? All right, so they get past that. And then it's, well, whose spot are they taking?
They are taking somebody's spot. Now, it's fuzzy whether LSU held out some rock, quote, roster spots. They got 100 and something. Is it 105 you can have on the team? So let's give them the benefit of the doubt that they're not actually kicking somebody off the team. But they are taking somebody's spot on the depth
but
chart.
But then I think the most important part is coaches say this all the time. Do not bring in unwanted distractions. We don't want to be the distractions. And what is Lane Kiffin doing? He's basically gift-wrapping the distraction and setting it right in the middle of the team room and saying, here you go, boys. Happy birthday. Here's our distraction our distraction for the whole season. Here it is, right here. These two guys. And then the lawsuit that's hanging over their heads. And then the SEC saying, hey, if you play these guys, you're going to be in big trouble. You're going to get fined. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. Now, what are the players? It's a distraction. Lane Kiffin don't give a damn. He doesn't. That tells me right there, Lane Kiffin don't give a damn about nothing but winning football games. That's it. He don't care about the guy's feelings.
And he's basically said that.
Exactly. He doesn't give a damn. So, again, he hasn't won enough to not give a damn. He hasn't won a championship as a head coach. He hasn't did anything but just left place to place to place to place. So, Lane, just stop with the idiotic. Whatever it is.
The idiocy.
Yeah, the idiocy. Stop with it. Because he's doing nothing but making it work. He ain't looking out for his players. He better not ever say, oh, I'm looking out for my players. Because he's not. Because now all these questions are going to continue to be directed, especially when the season starts. You can try to, you know, shelter these guys, but you can't shelter them once they leave the facility. These are all the questions that people are going to be asking, from their parents to their family members to other teammates to classmates, everybody, reporters, blogs, everything. They're going to be asking them because they know they ain't going to get none out of Lane. So now you've caused a distraction amongst your team.
This is what
good
I understand.
Good job, Lane.
That this guy who, I forget the guy's name, who just got cut from the Browns.
Daquan Wright, the tight end?
Yes. This tight end will be the backup tight end. No, LSU supposedly has a really good, and I don't know every player on every team. I apologize to LSU fans, but apparently they have a really, really good starting tight end.
Mm-hmm. So all of this is for fuss, a backup. For a backup tight end?
Yes. And I can also maybe deduce that in that room, wherever the leadership group was, didn't include the backup tight end or any of his buddies.
No, it sure enough didn't.
Should we bring this guy in to be our backup tight end? Like if the backup tight's in there, coach, I don't think
but so. I'm the backup tight end.
I'm the backup tight end. I've been here all summer. I've been doing all the workouts.
I do want to give a shout out to Dabo Swinney. Mm-hmm. Clemson playing LSU in week one. And Swinney was asked about Clemson's stance on pursuing NFL players, and he said, no pun intended, we're staying in our lane. So, shout out.
There you go. Nice.
Willie got it. It took Willie a second, but he got it.
But Clemson is an interesting part to this story because Dabo Swinney has wanted desperately to try and stick with the model that got him to a national championship. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to stick with recruit, develop, keep your guys there. He wanted so badly to hold on to that, and it hasn't worked. And they slipped to the middle of the ACC. A lot of people think they're probably going to be around 6-6 again this year. But I do at least admire him for trying to keep some order in the chaos. The problem is, you had no choice but to adapt some, and now he's trying to play catch up.
Lane loves chaos.
Indeed. One texter says, what Lane said feels like what a guy cheating on his wife would say to a chick trying to pick her up. Oh, no, baby, it's cool. My wife knows, and she doesn't care. She's cool. Yeah, she's okay, cool, buddy, says the texter.
He's just, I think he's making more problems. Now LSU is the pariah. You know, no one wants to deal with LSU anymore. You thought they were getting some sympathy over the Jaden Daniels thing, and then they go and do something boneheaded like this. And it's like, all right, you take a step back forward, now you take five steps backwards. I just, Listen, they may end up being a good team anyway because they have talent. I'm not saying they're going to win the national championship, but I think they're going to be better than they were last year. But still, the way Lane Kiffin has operated and to continue to knowing that the distractions is going to sort of it's going to infiltrate the locker room eventually. There's going to be questions asked of these players, especially if the guy can play, if the injunctions are held up.
Well, that's the next part of the story, as we know. I know we got to wrap this up, but so Thursday's a big day where they have the hearing, and then we'll see what they say. The SEC would like to squash this whole thing and overturn the injunction. Let's say, though, that the judge in Louisiana or whatever holds his ground and says the injunction stays. Then LSU has got to decide, is this guy worth putting in the game and being subject to the penalties that the league voted 15-0, 15 because the LSU guy didn't vote, that your coach would be suspended for half the year. You would get all these penalties, suspensions, playoff. Is it worth it for the backup tight end? By the way, the starting tight end, Tre'Davious Green, 6'7", 244. He's had 2 years as the starter. 33 catches last year, 433 yards, 7 touchdowns. He's pretty good. They want this guy from the Browns because it'll, quote, help them win to be the backup tight end. They must not really like the backup tight ends.
They must go
around
two tight end sets.
I also do want to give another shout out to Chris Ballard, Colts GM. This is from Nathan Brown, who covers the Colts for the Indianapolis Star. Quote of the day from Ballard, who said no rookies approach the team wishing to go back to college this preseason. Quote, that's the stupidest blank I've ever heard. End quote. Except he didn't say blank.
That is a question, though. Should the NFL weigh in? Like, they're sitting back laughing at all this, but they shouldn't be for this, right?
But there's nothing they can do about it. I don't think there's anything they can do about it.
I guess there's not much.
Yeah.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to discuss this story as the lane turns. I suppose we can come up with a catchier soap opera title for this SEC drama. 615-737-1025. But coming up next, over the weekend, we bid farewell to Will Levis. Thank you for the memories, Will Levis. But it's led to an uncomfortable conversation about something going on with the Titans, or at least in the history of the Titans, I should say. We'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.